ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Okay, producer Michelle, we've got to get this report out by lunchtime. Yep, I can do the first cut. Yeah, no worries. Oh, stop messaging me. How do I turn this off? I can't concentrate. There are so many things competing for your attention at work. It's a wonder you get anything done at all. All of this can create a feeling of overwhelm, which wears you out and your team as well. It might be time to call a doctor. Hello, I'm Lisa Leong and you're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National, helping to make your work life better. And we do have a doctor in the house for this episode, the teamwork doctor, that is. Dr. Leanne Davey is an organisational psychologist and New York Times best-selling author. She's been working with CEOs and teams for 25 years. Her latest book is called Thought Load, Manage the Madness and Free Your Team to Do Great Work. Leanne, welcome to This Working Life.
Thanks so much, Lisa. I'm glad to be here.
We tried to replicate at the top of the show just how stressful it can be when you're trying to deliver on a task. How did we go?
Pretty triggering for me. So all those bings and bongs, you could just immediately feel your palms starting to sweat and your heart racing. So it was working on me.
Just how often are we being interrupted at work, Leanne?
We're actually getting interrupted from our task about every 11 minutes. And only getting back to that original task 25 minutes later, which means even our interruptions are being interrupted.
Wow.
So that's terrifying. We're interrupting ourselves every 5 minutes to check our email and spending about a minute checking it. And then the scariest one, we're getting one of those bing bangs or bongs of a notification about every 2 minutes. So it is not a pretty picture.
You describe this as a thought load as opposed to a workload. So what's a thought load?
Thought load is the invisible tax on your performance that comes from what I call a treacherous triad of three things. One, the rising cognitive demands of all that we're expected to pay attention to. Two, the increasing emotional burdens, the things that are triggering us, making us worried, anxious, afraid throughout the day. And then that load is carried with depleted energy reserves where we're just exhausted, not sleeping well, not eating well. And so those three things together, rising cognitive demands, increasing emotional burdens, and decreasing energy reserves, that's our thought load.
And for those with a mathematical leaning, you created an equation. Tell us about that.
Yeah, because if you think about it, the load is really all that you need to pay attention to, plus all that emotional baggage you're carrying. That's the load. So if you think about it as a fraction, that's on the top of the fraction. But some days, maybe it's a Monday, you've had a great weekend, you've rested well, maybe even had a nap. And on that day, you may feel like, I can carry this load. It's not so heavy. But on another day, you're exhausted, you didn't sleep very well, you skipped the gym and are running on a banana nut muffin and it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, then the load feels so much heavier. So it's the load on the top and the energy on the bottom. And so either can happen. The load can get heavier on the top, which our thought load goes up, or our energy can get less on the bottom, and that similarly makes that load feel even heavier. So having it as this equation where we understand we need to think about both the top, the load, and the bottom, the energy and oomph we have to carry that load, we need to think about both of those things.
What happens then to our work and also our mental state when we're experiencing a heavy thought load?
So as our thought load gets heavy, we start trying to multitask. We feel anxious. We're like, okay, so much is piling up. Maybe I can accomplish two things at once. And the answer to that is you can't. You go more slowly at both. You make more mistakes, you know, all those sorts of things. So productivity is one thing. Quality is another. We become more anxious. Our mood goes down. That's a real problem. A lot of people talk to me about how their thought load is impacting their presence. They're at the dinner table, they're with their partner, their kids, and they realize their body's at the table, but they aren't there. People are having to say, mom, mom, you know, and that can be in a meeting as well. It's affecting collaboration. It's certainly driving burnout and those sorts of things. And then the fun thing is people are starting to tell me now about other things I hadn't even thought of. So a friend was at a conference last week about cybersecurity and phishing attacks on from our email. And he said, you know what? My thought load was so high last week. I wasn't really processing things. I was just trying to move too fast. And I clicked on a phishing link because it just, it looked right. It seemed fine. And I just, my thought load was so high. I didn't do those extra little checks and I got caught. And I thought, wow.
Why is it useful to focus at the team level for an intervention when it comes to thought load?
There just is so little work that we have to accomplish in this day and age that doesn't require a team. The teamwork doctor is my mission in life. And so what happened was when I started noticing that teams were really struggling, they were not showing up for each other. You would come into a meeting and it was almost like just a collection of one-on-one meetings with the boss where everybody else was only spectating if it wasn't their turn to talk. And people were becoming quite impatient with one another, very emotional, very defensive. So I was very worried about what is happening to teamwork, what is happening to collaboration. And really it was in investigating that and trying to understand what was going wrong that I came across this thought load problem. So kind of the order was protecting teams first and then realizing thought load is what's getting in the way.
Often managers feel like they're being forced into being therapists at work. What's your advice here?
Yeah, I agree with you, Lisa. I'm hearing that for people. And some of them are exasperated, but other people are just nervous about that. They care about the people and they don't feel qualified to help them with the kinds of issues that are coming to them. So I would say very, very, very importantly, you are not, should not be, cannot be a therapist for your team. So that's a really important thing to remember. But you can, while having a legitimate business conversation, do so much good for someone who is processing a lot of emotion. You can ask questions that wouldn't sound like they're even about emotions or feelings. How do you see this playing out? What's at stake here? What are we missing in this decision-making process? Those are all questions that will help you as a manager to take your team through that emotional response, get some insight about what's going on for them without ever sounding like you're trying to be their therapist.
And is this the same as a drawbridge question or is this different?
Yeah, no, it's very similar. So where does that crazy line come from? So in the book, I needed a metaphor to talk about how we need to think about emotions differently, because a lot of us are very put off by seeing an emotional reaction in the workplace. So the way I describe it is the dragon is breathing fire. If somebody's having an emotional reaction, it's because they're protecting treasure. We have to figure out, what is this about? What are they trying to protect? What's the treasure here? So the open drawbridge questions is the way I talk about, you need to ask things that are going to allow the person to kind of draw you that treasure map. So yes, those examples I was giving, like what's at stake here for you, those are open drawbridge questions. They're quite broad, they're open-ended. And so each person will answer those questions differently and start to give you clues as to what this is really about, what treasure feels at risk for them. And the other thing is, as you ask those questions, it's also very validating. The person feels like this is a safe place to be human. It's okay that I have things I care deeply about. It's okay that I'm a little vulnerable here. So we get a really positive reaction from a manager saying like, this is okay. We got space for this. Let me hear, how do you see this playing out? What risk am I missing, right? What would have to be included for this to be a win for you? Those kinds of open drawbridge questions will allow them to draw you the map. And once you understand what the emotion is about, what they're trying to protect, then you've got the information from which to come to, okay, so how do we move forward? What's a possible solution? So not being afraid when we see emotional reactions at work and not trying to just smooth them over and make nice, but instead trying to understand. There's treasure here. What's the treasure? It makes a big difference.
And when you're asking the drawbridge questions, like what's at stake here, what do I need to pay more attention to? How does that differ from a question that might accidentally lead you into being a therapist?
They're very much about the issue or the work, as opposed to saying, you know, tell me how you feel, right? Like, what are you afraid of? Those kinds of questions can be very intimidating at work, particularly as a manager. You have power over this person. It may feel very vulnerable for them to answer, what are they afraid of? But how do you see this playing out is just a better way to, in some ways you'll get the same, you'll get the same answer, but you'll probably keep the conversation feeling more safer, feeling more appropriate for the workplace than if you went after it as, you know, their feelings per se.
Leanne, if one team member is particularly upset, it's likely to spread to others. How can you manage this?
Yeah, so you're describing a phenomenon called emotional contagion, which, you know, we've just survived a global pandemic. So having more contagion spreading in the air seems scary, but that's exactly what happens. So our brains are built with mirror neurons, and they are very, very efficient at picking up the emotional state of people around us. If you want to imagine it, think about if you've ever been to a comedy show where the comedian is bombing and all of a sudden your palms are sweating as if you were the one on the stage. That's emotional contagion. It happens without us being conscious of it. So if you want to stop a negative emotion from spreading around a team, you have to bring awareness to the fact that it's happening. So as a manager, the first thing you want to notice probably is body language is the first thing that you'll see from a person. Maybe their shoulders are starting to slump if they're sad or despondent. Maybe if they're getting anxious, they'll start clicking their pen or wiggling their foot on the chair or whatever else. So you want to notice that and get people to be curious about what's going on, because once we're cognitively engaged, once we're thinking about what's going on, we're much less vulnerable to emotional contagion. So we might say something like, okay, I noticed you just started clicking your pen. What are you thinking? How is this landing with you, right? We go back to those open drawbridge questions. And what happens is once you've called it out, then we get people's curiosity about the other person's experience instead of it just spreading to them without them realizing it. And then we can help them, you know, process that emotion, you know, what else might be true here? How else might we think about that? And getting to, well, what's one thing you could do that would make it better?
Is it okay to draw attention to it? Aren't you making it worse by maybe even distracting the whole team with someone's possible emotional state?
Yeah. So it's actually, so unfortunately, the way humans work, their brains are picking it up, even if they don't know they're picking it up. So, you know, trust me, it's spreading. And if you think like, well, maybe if I just ignore it, it'll get better. Unlikely, unlikely. So no, we want to head it off at the pass. There is a difference between an emotion, which is a pre-conscious physiological experience in our body, and a feeling, which is the story that we're telling ourselves about why we're having that experience in our body. So emotions are non-negotiable. They happen before we're conscious of them. And there's a lot of data and a lot of value in an emotion. We want to extract that value. What we want to worry about is that we want to interrupt it before it becomes the feeling and this concocted fiction and story about what's going on. So emotions are full of data. Feelings are full of drama. So trust me, if the emotion is in the room, it's going to spread unless you kind of shine the light on it, talk about it, think about it, and reframe it before it becomes that drama. So really important not to just like, la, 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 if I ignore this, it'll go away.
How do we then resync the team after, you know, bringing this to the light, as you say?
So there's a couple of options. So if you think about it, if everybody has sort of gone down the spiral with a negative mood, what's not going to work is you just trying to be like super peppy. Like, people are just going to look at you like, were you even just in that conversation? It's going to feel invalidating. So I recommend meet them where they're at, but say something that starts to move the conversation in a more positive direction. So if you've just had a really hard conversation about, you know, maybe your plans aren't going well, you aren't making the numbers. If you've had a really depressing conversation about that, match that mood, but say something positive. So, well, you know what? It's not great news, but I am really impressed with how we were all willing to confront the brutal facts here. I feel like we now are better able, better prepared. We know what's coming. So you can say something positive to start to shift the vibe, but kind of meeting the tone.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong. My guest is Leanne Davey, teamwork expert and author of Thought Load, Manage the Madness and Free Your Team to Do Great Work. Later, how to expose the unseen work that could be sinking your team's boat without you knowing. Moving on to the attention side of thought load here. Leanne, a common problem is this never-ending to-do list, like more projects always being added to an already busy workload. So let's say I am a manager, I'm responsible for a team, they're not doing so well, possibly because of this overwhelm. Where do I start?
I think the most important place to start is recentering on what your team exists to do. And it's crazy. If we look at how many hours a week that we're spending doing side quests as opposed to the actual quest that our team is paid and hired to do. So I always start with, let's go back to what's the unique value that our organization is counting on us to deliver? What's the most important thing? Because you know what? We're going to get 100 emails from finance and compliance training and HR this and going to get invited to a million meetings. But what are we really here for? So starting there with understanding what is the most unique value that we as a team need to add, or any one person as an individual. How do we start there? Then we can have a difficult conversation about what else are other teams calling on us to do, and which of those things are going to go to the top of our list, and which are going to fall off our list, or at least be delayed. And then which of those side quests do we actually need to do?
How many of these quests do you think are doable? What's too many?
Great question. Oh, it's a very small number that are doable, right? And I think the key thing is, you know, in a year, when I hear people say, these are our 10 priorities, I remind them that priority comes from the Latin that means first, and you can only have one first. But that's not to say you can't accomplish 10 things this year. But if you try and accomplish all 10 on Monday, you will really not get anything accomplished. So it's not so much how many quests in total, it's how many quests at once. And really, it's a couple that you can be managing, two or three maybe, that you can be managing at any one time. And then get those done, and next month, pick another three. You will get further in your quarter or your year if you do a couple at a time, get them done, focus on them, do them well, than if you try and do 10 all at once and really don't move the needle on any of them.
You have this great concept of unseen work. What is this?
What I've learned is there is a huge amount of unseen work, cognitive, physical, emotional labor that your team members are doing that you have no clue about. So it may be that there's some kind of committee they got invited to, and they've been going to this committee meeting or doing the charity fundraiser or whatever, something they have to pay attention to. You had no idea. Somebody's asked them to create a report every month, and you didn't know they were asking for that. So they might be having to pay attention to things. It might be that there's something emotionally triggering that might be from their home life. But from an unseen work perspective, it may be there's somebody on your team who's really struggling, and they've been quietly coming to this person, spending quite a lot of their time and energy, and the person's been helping them and coaching them and supporting them, but it's taking a lot of their time. Another one that comes up a lot is when you have a conflict between two team members and a third person is stuck kind of mediating that. So the unseen work exercise is an opportunity for folks to let you know everything that's sitting in their thought load to give you a chance to add value and help them triage that. When you look at that list, it's so fascinating how often managers are like, "You're doing what? For whom? Why? Like you shouldn't be doing that." Or, "You're doing that now when we have the biggest shipment month of the year? Don't do that this month. Like that can wait." Or those kinds of ways that you can help and support and manage someone's thought load when you know what's in it. But when there's all this unseen physical, cognitive, and emotional labor that people are doing that you have no clue about, it's really hard to help them.
And so is it on the manager to help with that, to help triage that?
I think so. These things come at you, particularly things that come cross-functionally from other groups. Often they'll come from somebody senior to the person. So it's a director in some other team who's asking your individual contributor to do something for them. They don't feel empowered to say no to that person. They need your clout and your support to be able to say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa." Like, first of all, don't be assigning work to my team without me knowing. Please come through me. And actually, I don't think this is a priority for my person right now. So usually they need your help. Obviously, the more mature, more sophisticated you become as an individual contributor or at any level, the better able you are to manage some of those things on your own. But it's a really healthy conversation to make sure your manager understands everything that's sort of sitting in your thought load.
We've tackled emotional dysregulation, managing attention. So let's look at how to restore your team's energy. What are your tips, Leanne, for restoring energy to a team?
So there's three things I talk about in how to fill your cup, make sure that you have energy. One, the best way to fill your cup is from a waterfall because then it's abundant, right? So how do we create chunks of time, hopefully around 2 hours at a time, where folks can work uninterrupted, work on something they care about that's meaningful, some kind of a task with a little bit of challenge. When we can work in flow uninterrupted, when we as a manager make it clear that we have blackout periods where people are allowed to have all notifications turned off and just do work, then we create this waterfall of energy. The second is helping people understand that sometimes, unfortunately, energy is not as abundant as a waterfall, but we have to kind of dig deep into the well and understanding yourself as an individual. What are the things, what are the deep wellsprings of energy you have? And in the book, I talk about four different styles of how we get overwhelmed. And I have an assessment folks can do on thoughtload.com. The assessment allows you to understand what's your own personal type of overwhelm, and then what's the wellspring that gets you out of that. So those are the two ways we can fill our cup. But the third thing, which I shouldn't ignore, is if your cup has cracks in it, that's no good. And so we have to understand, what are the things that are draining us? Are we in conflict debt? Are there issues, resentments, grievances that are sitting with us in our thought load, draining our energy all the time? So making sure we're looking for both waterfalls and wells to fill our cup, but being just as vigilant about, fixing the cracks in our cup where our energy is draining away.
Okay, Leanne, so each week we ask our guests to nominate something this working lifers can try as an experiment to help make their work life better. Can you leave us with a tip or two to manage thought load and give it a go this week?
Here's the homework. So instead of that one giant to-do list the length of your arm, I want you to figure out what is the most important quest that you can contribute to this week, and what are the number one, number two, and number three activities that will move you the furthest on that, and then what's your one, two, and three for the most important ways you can support your colleagues and contribute to other people's quests. And the third list, what's the, in order, the side quests that you need to get to this week. I'm going to put list number one into my most precious time. I'm going to put list number two into that next tier. And then I'm relegating those side quests to the time where I'm drooling on the desk, basically. I think that's the one thing to start taking back your time and making it serve your most important quest instead of your time serving everybody else's priorities and not your own.
Thanks so much, Leanne.
Thanks, Lisa.
Dr. Leanne Davey is an organizational psychologist and author of Thought Load: Manage the Madness and Free Your Team to Do Great Work. Thanks for listening to This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Tim James on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Nam, Melbourne. If you'd like to hear more from us, you can like or subscribe to our show on ABC Listen or anywhere you get your podcast. I'm Lisa Leong. And until next time, work it, baby.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.